Tuesday, February 9th. Football's over. It's baseball season. What's up, everybody? Fantasy baseball today, live in person with Scott White and Ethan Cummings.
You're here.
You sound so happy.
I am very happy. I'm very happy to be here. I'm excited for the show. We have really good emails. People are bringing it. Bringing it with good emails. I'm excited to read those at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Also, there's no theme today. It's kind of a random show. But I like what we've got here, and I'm excited. And did you know?
I thought we were going to start position previews.
No, next week.
Next week, position previews.
Position previews start next week.
Okay, get excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. So fantasy baseball season's good. By the end of the position previews, which should be about early March, everybody should be totally good to go drafting. You should know everything you need to know. And that's awesome. Now, Lance McCullers, we're going to talk about him today. How did I not know this? His dad pitched in the big leagues from 1985 to 1992. There are two Lance McCullers, same name.
Yeah, Lance McCullers Jr.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd seen the Jr. attached. Now that you mention it, you know, it's one of those, I never thought about it before, but now that you mention it, I feel like I've seen people throw a Jr. behind his name sometimes.
Well, that's because you're Scott White Jr.
I am a junior myself, yes.
So you knew that. Yeah. Heath, how's it going over there?
It's going great.
You going to get nerdy today? BABIP?
Oh, I've got some BABIP for you right off the start. Like the second name you're going to say, I'm going to say BABIP.
Thank you for saying BABIP, by the way, instead of BABIP.
I'm only going to say it when you say it first.
All right, the next thing I wanted to talk about, because later on the show we're going to talk about the pitchers that went in rounds 9 through 10 in our mock draft that we did on the air, and those pitchers were Iwakuma, in this order. Iwakuma, Taijuan Walker, Tyson Ross, Jordan Zimmermann, Steven Matz, Yu Darvish, Francisco Liriano, and Lance McCullers. We'll talk about those guys, who you like from that group, who you don't like. But Taijuan Walker, this is your stat of the day. Taijuan Walker kind of sucked last year.
Ah, boo.
And I was just going back and looking at the numbers, and he only had one good stretch the entire season. It was a 7-start stretch between May 29th and July 1st. Walker went 6-1 with a 1.68 ERA, a strikeout per inning, but he still allowed 5 home runs. 3 walks, 51 strikeouts, pretty incredible. He was pitching unbelievably. But after that stretch, he had only thrown 91 and a third. So I'm not going to just be, the innings got to him. After that stretch, 4.83 ERA, 12 home runs, give it 25 home runs on the year in 169 and two-thirds with a 1.2 whip. Taijuan Walker did not have a good year other than a 7-start stretch. BABIP me all you want.
No.
Well, part
it's
of it
true.
Is.
No, it's not true.
Part of it is BABIP.
Okay.
He was just a little bit unlucky. He was not good in the first half. He was better in the second half.
Look what he did after that 7-start
but
stretch.
But the biggest split for him is, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of Yordan Ventura, because he was the same way. With nobody on base, he was outstanding last year.
Okay.
He struck out a batter per inning. Hit 24% K rate. His whip was only 1.06. He got in the stretch with runners on base, and he kind of just completely lost all effectiveness.
Well, he better not let anybody
struck
on
out
base.
Struck out 7 batters per 9, had a 1.44 whip. But part of that is he had a 350 BABIP with runners on base. Now, that's going to do two things. One, you're not going to get as many people out. Plus, if people are getting some fortunate hits against you and there's already people on base, that's going to lead to more run scoring.
Okay.
Adam, he had a second 7-start stretch, July 22nd to August 28th, when he had a 3.30 ERA. His final 20 starts of the season, he had a 0.98 whip.
It includes that 7-start stretch.
Yeah, and includes...
You and I can manipulate the numbers.
The bad starts, too.
The walks are really low. So that helps the whip, right? But the home runs were a problem last year.
Okay, sure.
And
the ERA was kind of the last 20 starts when he had that 0.98 whip, he had a 3.62 ERA. So the ERA was kind of high proportionately right to the whip. But yeah, home runs are part of that. And considering he doesn't exactly play in a home run friendly park, I don't expect that to be a problem forever.
So,
I mean, you could say home runs were a problem for Noah Syndergaard last year, too. His home run rate was 1.1 per nine, not that much lower than Taijuan Walker.
So why was Syndergaard so much better than Taijuan Walker?
Well, his strikeout rate was higher, but it's not like they're on completely different planets as far as that goes. I think that's a way Walker can close the gap too.
I think the one thing that concerns me when I look at the second half for Taijuan Walker was so much better, his walks went way down. His strikeouts went down too, though. He wasn't striking as many batters out. I'm not excited about Taijuan Walker if the answer is he got better because he just started throwing more hittable pitches and let pitch to contact, because that's not anything to be excited about.
Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more about Walker, how you guys compare him to the other pitchers that went around him. Actually, we talked a bit about that on Wednesday's show, or whenever the heck we did that part two of the... Thursday. We did that mock draft. It aired Friday. But in case you missed it, more on those pitchers, rounds 9 through 10. Your website of the day, this one's for Al Melchior, who's not here this week. He'll be back next week. Baseballheatmaps.com. It's one of Al's favorites, and it has average fly ball distance, which tells you how far batters are hitting the ball. And they still have him as Mike Stanton, but he was number one last year. And Chris Davis was number two. Interesting player to me. Pedro Alvarez was number three, for what that's worth.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all about Chris Davis.
No.
He hits the ball really hard.
Not surprising. I just wanted to talk about Chris Davis. Has nothing to do with the average fly ball distance. But a guy that scares me a little bit. But then I kind of went back and I looked at his 4 years in Baltimore. And other than 2014 when he hit just under 200, Davis is pretty consistent. I mean, 33, 53, 26, and 47 home runs, and the 26 home runs were only in 127 games, and that was his terrible year. That was 2014. I don't know. I think maybe I'm a little too afraid of him, but just maybe that 2014 season sticking with me a bit. And
When do you think you'd draft him?
I won't get him because I don't think I want to take him in the second round.
I don't think you have to. Maybe in Roto.
In Roto, yeah.
Because Chris Davis is the last of a tier. He's the last first baseman before you get into that Gonzalez, Hosmer, Freeman territory, where you're really looking at off the edge of a cliff at first base. So I could see in Roto, where the strikeouts don't have a direct negative impact, that he could go maybe late second round in Roto.
Yeah.
I think more likely it'll be early third.
In Roto?
Yeah.
Heath, you...
I'm okay with taking him in the second.
You liked him a lot last year, Chris Davis.
I liked him a lot last year. I like him a lot right now. He had one bad year, but even that bad 2014, and he was still on a 30 home run pace if he doesn't get suspended. And he got suspended for something that he had a waiver for in 2013. He had a waiver for it last year. So the 1 year that he wasn't allowed to take it was the 1 year that he hit below 200.
That was the Adderall, right?
Yes. And it just so happens that, I mean, I'm going to say it again, BABIP, 2011, 366, 2012, 335, 2013, 336, 2014, 242, 2015, 319. So he's a 320 BABIP guy.
That surprises me that he would have a good BABIP.
Well, he hits the ball so hard. Hmm. I think it's part of it.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Because he's not like a speedy guy, obviously.
No.
But I get the Adderall argument. I think actually he was technically on something else last year, but he got clearance to take some other kind of drug to help with his attention.
You could say drug.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to think of a better way to think about it.
But, medication.
So, and obviously he had a bounce back season. Now, how directly did that impact the numbers? I don't think anyone can say. Obviously, the trend is promising.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if he could have a 240 BABIP once, what's stopping him from doing it again?
But you know? Don't say that about anybody else that's got a 4 year history of doing something and 1 year where it was different. You don't say, well, if we did that with everybody, then we would always be looking for the most negative possible outcome. We have to look for the most likely outcome, don't we?
You don't have to. I think basically it boils down to strikeout rate for me. Anybody who strikes out as often as Chris Davis does, I think is going to have a lot of variability in batting average. Because it is so luck dependent. So I don't necessarily trust him either. I think there comes a point, and for me it's early third round, where you have to take him just because of what he could do and how the positions line up.
In but Roto and
Puig? I understand your concerns, Adam.
Do you think it early third round in both formats?
More like middle third round in points.
All right, this guy, Chris Davis, for what it's worth, was the number two first baseman in fantasy in Roto last year categories, but in points leagues, number five.
Yeah.
So big difference in value with him.
I mean, there might be five first basemen that go in the first two rounds.
Yeah, yes. But will he be, closer to that to that next tier, or will he be part of the top five or six? So how many is it?
It's, I mean, Miguel Cabrera wasn't a top five first baseman.
That's true.
And, you know, depending on how you expect him to finish health-wise.
So we got Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Encarnacion, Rizzo, Votto, Abreu, Davis.
Yeah, I mean, Posey's in there somewhere, too. He's technically a first baseman, but yeah.
Okay. All right, let's get to the news and notes here. And Arizona signed Tyler Clippard, 2 years, $12.25 million. Very interesting because, well, first of all, you should read what Matt Snyder wrote on CBSSports.com. Very interesting article about Tyler Clippard. And basically, 2013, 2014, and most of 2015, maybe a little more than half of 2015, Tyler Clippard was a very, very good reliever. Everything fell apart for him just before the trade to the Mets, continued into the postseason when he had an ERA over 6, 6.59 in September, 6.75 in the postseason. And Clippard, fly ball pitcher, one of the most fly ball heavy relievers in baseball, and velocity was down, plus he had a back injury late last year. So anyway, who's the closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks? A roundabout way of asking.
I think like right after that happened, there was one of the Diamondbacks beat writers that tweeted out that he still expected Ziegler to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
they actually said Ziegler's still the guy. And,
yeah.
And they acquired Clippard to be a setup man. But I think, you know, it's where Clippard is now at this stage of his career. And like you said, Adam, he used to be almost what Dylan Betances is now, that setup man that we all hoped would get a closer gig and
right.
Just never happened. And he's not that anymore. I think this version of Clippard is good enough that he could overtake Ziegler, but not so good that he necessarily will overtake Ziegler. So it just it makes it an annoying signing in fantasy because now it's another split situation in an NL-only league where you have to go for – you can't go for just one or the other.
My take – and maybe it's wrong, but I would see it as like I don't know if he can overtake Ziegler. Ziegler could lose the job to him, but as long as Ziegler's good, it's his job.
Okay, I mean,
he's not going to lose.
I think that's true for any closer that enters the season
right.
as the closer.
I don't think Ziegler's such a slam dunk to be good that won't happen. What I'm saying. It's not like, you know,
they have not
four
solved.
Strikeouts per nine last year or something like that.
That team needs. Like, they have not solved closer in a long time, you know, the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anyway, three guys that avoided arbitration. J.D. Martinez, two-year deal, $18.5 million. Josh Donaldson, 2 years, $29 million, according to Sportsnet. A.J. Pollock, 2 years, just over $10 million. So, we got Donaldson is a first-round pick. Pollock, what round are we thinking for him? Second round?
Yeah. Early second round, like maybe the first pick of the second round.
Why can't A.J. Pollock be the number four pick in fantasy drafts? If you think he can repeat what he did last year in a roto or categories league where you need steals, this guy was the number two outfielder in that format. Why can't A.J. Pollock be the number four pick in fantasy drafts?
I would just say because he doesn't need to be. Because you know nobody's going to draft him that early.
But you know you're not going to get him if you have the fourth pick. So if
That's
you truly
true.
Believe he's that good in a five outfielder league where you need steals,
yeah,
why not?
Well, I mean, it's a little riskier than somebody like Kershaw, who, you know, is a slam dunk to be amazing.
Right.
Pollock has 1.5 years of doing that, which is enough to more or less convince me. But, you know, even other hitters at that point, Giancarlo Stanton's more proven.
Well, Donaldson is another guy we just mentioned. I think he's been going fourth. He mm-hmm. went fourth in our points league draft, and if he doesn't go fourth, he'll go fifth or sixth or whatever. So, Heath, what do you think? AJ Pollock, first round? Am I crazy? Fourth overall?
I think you're crazy.
I wouldn't do it. But,
no, I know.
But I can make the case.
You're trying to be crazy. You're trying too hard.
I think there's a logical case to be made.
I think he's the best five category player in baseball today because Trout isn't that anymore. McCutcheon isn't that anymore. And then on top of it, he hardly strikes out. So that's like the sixth category in points leagues.
We say, yeah.
But he just doesn't hit the 40 home runs that the other guys are hitting.
He gets 40 20 steals, though.
Yeah, he's 20 home runs last
40
year.
40 steals, yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But the batting average, I mean, look, he's been the same guy, AJ Pollock, the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago was injury plagued, but that's why he lasted to like round 12 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which, man, that was a value pick.
Absolutely. All right, so he's an early pick. And J.D. Martinez, I like ESPN's home run tracker. It's very cool. He was top three in the just enough home runs, according to the ESPN home run tracker. But I wouldn't worry about it because Mike Trout and Bryce Harper were also top three. And I went back. I looked at 2014's just enough leaders. Nelson Cruz, Josh Donaldson, Yoenis Cespedes, they were all in the top five or six, I think. And they obviously hit a bunch of home runs in 2015. So that doesn't really concern me. But do you guys have any doubts about J.D. Martinez and how legit he is?
I think my doubts were answered last year. And the batting average did decline some after his breakout 2014, where he was like a 320 hitter, despite the high strikeout rate. So I think we were concerned just how hard he would fall. But the power is so good that the overall package, even with the dip in batting average, he was still, you know, borderline elite outfielder.
Top 12, 11th in points, 9th in Roto for J.D. Martinez. He did drive in 102. He scored 93 runs.
I do think it looks a little interesting. We don't have a big enough sample size with him to say which one's odd, but his home run to fly ball rate went up just a little bit last year, like 1.5%. His hard contact rate went down at the same time. And it's largely just, so the home runs mostly went up because he hit so many more fly balls. 36% fly balls in 2014. Last year was 43.5%.
Is that a troubling trend?
I wouldn't expect him to hit 38 home runs again next year.
Well, I think the home runs are going to come down for a lot of guys, because last year, I'd like to look this up unless you guys know, but it's amazing. A lot of 40 home run guys. And
I think it was an up year for home runs last year compared to...
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe he hits 32.
And international news, Cuban brothers Ulieski and Lourdes Goriel, maybe?
Sure.
They have defected, and Ulieski is 31, which means he's open for bidding. I was reading Joel Sherman this morning. Anybody can bid on him, any team, and he's awesome. So he might be fantasy relevant this year.
The thing I read about that's really interesting with him, it's going to take several weeks, if not a couple of months, for him to actually become a free agent.
Okay.
Because he has to go through the whole process. And so if he signs before July 1st, then most of the teams are able to bid on him. If he waits until after July 1st, anybody that's gone over their cap for spending on players this year can't.
Really?
This or is can't, the, this can't, the older can't offer him as big a bonus.
This is the older brother.
I think it's the younger one.
Yeah, the younger one, right? He's under 23, but he will be 23 soon, I guess. Or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm not
he
sure.
Will be 23 this year. It's a wonky deal. I think there's a lot of details to be ironed out on both of them.
Well, the older brother is like a major slugger and could be a really good Major League Baseball player, according to what I read.
For the Industriales last year, the older one, Ulieski Goriel. We're talking 106 plate appearances, so small sample. He hit .535 with 10 home runs.
Yeah.
15 walks to 1 strikeout.
Wow. Okay, so keep it in mind, fantasy relevant. So before we get to the emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, rounds 9 through 10, these were the starting pitchers that went off the board. Hisashi Iwakuma, Taiwan Walker, Tyson Ross, Jordan Zimmerman, Steven Matz, Yu Darvish, Francisco Liriano, and Lance McCullers. Now, a couple rounds earlier, I don't remember all the names, but I know Tanaka and Waka were taken. And then you wait
a little bit. It's fun that those guys go together, Tanaka and Waka.
And then you wait a little bit, and you get this group of Iwakuma, Waka, Ross, Zimmerman, Matz, Darvish, Liriano, McCullers. Is there a big drop-off, or are they pretty much the same?
I'm trying to remember where I have them tiered, because it would be better to know that when I had some time to think about it than just talking off the top of my head.
I can talk about Tyson Ross while you look that up.
Okay, go ahead.
Because he's the one guy out of that group that I like on the same level as Waka and Tanaka.
Oh yeah.
He was one of the guys that I highlighted in my regression NL pitchers column. He's got a lot of things that look like he should be a better pitcher next year. Struck out 9.7 batters per 9 innings.
Yeah.
I think Ross should be in for a big year.
I was there last year, But I'm not sure he's going to get better than 2014 because high walks, high strikeouts, high pitch counts, six-inning pitcher.
Right. The funny thing is, if you look at his FIP, he was actually better last year than he was in 2014.
Yeah, he was.
I would
but
guess
it's just how deep can he go into games? Is he going to get the innings to matter in points leagues? Is he going to get the wins to matter in either league?
Well, I mean, 195, 196 innings, that's not... We're talking about a pitcher that's ranked 26.
It's not enough to make him better than he's already regarded as.
But he was better in 2014 than he was in 2015.
Yeah, I'm saying that's probably his peak.
What, 2014?
Yeah.
Okay, if he strikes out 200 batters with a 3.2 ERA or a 3.1 ERA...
What was his
ERA?
He's
Francisco Liriano, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Except more reliable for innings, probably.
Good Gio Gonzalez. I know Gonzalez was worse last year. But.
Well, Liriano is in that round 9 through round 10 range. Who's your favorite of the guys I listed? I'm not going to read them again. Who's your favorite?
Walker.
Oh, Ross for you.
Yeah.
Walker for you?
Yeah. Would you contend that Walker doesn't even belong in this group?
No. Here's the thing. I watched Taijuan Walker a number of times because he was always a guy that we spent a lot of time talking about on the podcast, so I always made it a point to watch. He feels like the kind of guy, he puts it together, he's going to be ridiculously good, you know? So I'm not writing him off. I don't think he had a good year, and I don't really think you can make the case that he did, but that doesn't mean he won't have a good year in 2016. I think Taijuan Walker could be awesome.
Okay.
But I really like Lance McCullers.
Okay.
I don't know why. Feeling it. Maybe it's because he had a dad who played baseball. Show him
the
ropes. Bloodlines.
No, I mean, sound like a scout.
Nah, that's just a joke. But what can you take away from McCullers? His numbers were really good. Let me get them for you. McCullers was 3.22 ERA, 43 walks, 129 strikeouts in 125 and two-thirds, 1.19 whip. Only 10 home runs allowed in 125 and two-thirds. And he had one start, McCullers, with 7 hits and 6 runs in a third of an inning. So take that away, and he probably had much better numbers. I don't know, maybe a little concerned about the innings. They were much higher than they were in 2014.
Well, they've already said he's on an innings limit for this year, haven't they?
Yes, they have. It'll be interesting to see how that works in.
All right.
Because that... I didn't lower him in my rankings when they said that. This was around the time they signed Doug Fister. But it made me feel like there's a scenario where they could just sideline him to start the year, anticipating a playoff run, so they don't run into the situation their Mets did with Harvey last year. So,
And they've got six starters, so they could, they conceivably do that.
They could. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although I think Feldman is coming back from a surgery, so there's a chance he may not be ready. But the long and short of it is, if it's a situation where they're limiting his innings at the beginning, he is probably going to fall in drafts, which would ultimately be a good thing. If it's a situation where they're limiting at the end, it's going to be one of those guys who you're looking to trade at the All-Star break.
And if you're playing with smart players,
yeah,
not sure you're going to be able to pull that off.
Might not happen.
Is there anything you don't like about McCullers?
That's the biggest thing for me. Other than the fact he's not Walker and doesn't have that strike-throwing ability that really set Syndergaard apart last year, which Walker does.
Okay.
He's in the same class as a Mats or... I wonder, you don't have... And let me make sure I have him tiered together. I think I do. You don't have him listed along with... Crap, I can't find his name. The Yankees pitcher.
Severino?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going off our draft results.
Ah, okay. So he went later. Severino did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Severino's interesting to me.
Yeah, there are, I think, about 5 pitchers, sophomore pitchers, who didn't pitch full rookie season, who I think... any of them could take a big step forward this year. And so I've tiered them all together. I don't have a major distinction between them. It's kind of just who I can get at the best value. And it's Lance McCullers, Carlos Rodon, Joe Ross, Raisel Iglesias, and Luis Severino. They're all part of that. They're all right there next to each other for me. I do think I have McCullers ranked the highest of the bunch, but... I don't see myself drafting him a lot because I'd be just as happy with any of the others.
The only problem I have with McCullers is putting him in this group because I think what we're really hoping for is that Lance McCullers can be Tyson Ross this year. And on an innings limit with probably a considerably lower floor.
Is it considerably lower?
Well, if he only throws 150 innings, it is for sure.
Well, he threw over 150 innings last year, so I seriously doubt.
80?
Yeah. Innings limits, yeah, okay.
No, that's interesting.
That's a fair point.
Because is Lance McCullers a ground ball pitcher like Tyson Ross is? Because that's part of Ross's package. A lot of ground balls doesn't give him home runs, which is a good thing. But it's also, it also puts a pretty high floor on his hits per nine, because ground balls yield more hits of the non-home run variety than fly balls do. So I think maybe McCullers has better whip potential than Ross because of that.
Well, doesn't he walk fewer guys than Ross?
It's probably pretty close.
Oh, really?
But, you know, yeah, he did. Ross was 3.9, McCullers 3.1. You know, 3 is not good.
No.
It's not terrible, but it's not good. So there's also, I mean, we've seen enough from Ross by now to know he's not getting any better as far as that goes.
Well, he's been better the past 2 years. He's probably going to be 3.1.
He's
going to
be above 3.
Yeah.
He's going to be above 3.
Right. Also, McCullers threw 125 last year.
No, but that's in the majors. But with the minors in the postseason, he was over 160.
Was he?
Yeah, he was at 164. So,
and I'm not trying to argue McCullers is better than Ross, that I take him ahead of Ross, but to say he's aspiring to be Ross, I think, might be limiting his upside a bit.
Okay.
You see upside higher than a low 3 RA with 200 strikeouts this year?
Well, you're just cherry-picking the stats you like. There's bad stats in there, too.
Okay.
So I think I'm not ruling out McCullers as McCullers prime is better than Ross's prime, and I have no idea.
No, I'm just talking about this year.
I'm
just talking about this year.
Well, it could begin this year.
Okay.
Well, how about the wins? Wouldn't you say he's set up for more wins than Tyson Ross?
I think that's fair to say, depending on how they limit the innings. If they're leaving him out there for 5 innings at a time, probably not.
Right.
All right. Well, plus last year was a really disappointing year for Tyson Ross, you know? Basically, he had like a quality start almost every time out, I feel, if I remember correctly. But it was always like 6 innings, 3 runs, you know, which is actually 4.50 ERA. What was his final ERA?
3.2.
Tyson Ross?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No.
That's weird.
And I let me make sure. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure. I was just looking at it. 3.26. Last 3 years, 3.17, 2.81, 3.26.
Gosh, that's so strange because I just remember him being like 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 innings, 3 runs, 5 innings, 2 runs, you know.
I think he might have had some other starts that were better than that.
Yeah, apparently. How many times did he pitch 7 innings, though?
Not many.
All right. Well, I apologize for not knowing that off the top of my head. I should have been closer than... I didn't think he had a 450 ERA.
6 times he went 7 innings or more.
I will say this last thing about this group of pitchers here. If you told me that health was not a concern, Iwakuma would easily be number one in this group for me. And boy, was he awesome.
Ahead of Yu Darvish. Health's not a concern.
Well, no, because I know Darvish is not going to be ready for opening day. You know,
right.
I'm not saying guarantee me a 30-start season. I'm saying Iwakuma failed his physical with the Dodgers and ended up back with Seattle.
Right.
That's a big concern for me. If you look at Grant Balfour, right, a couple years ago, he failed his physical with Tampa Bay, if I recall, or Baltimore.
Baltimore.
That was bad. So that worries me for Iwakuma, but he finished the season really strong in the last 2 months and looked like the old Hisashi Iwakuma. So, you know, the old Hisashi Iwakuma has got to be better than these high upside guys that we're not sure about. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, he's got
but there are questions.
He's basically a mid-3 ERA guy for his last 300 innings.
But he's a guy who goes 7-8 consistently with a very low whip. I guess it just depends what you value and how much you value it.
Right.
I think Ross is clearly a better strikeout pitcher than Iwakuma. Normally, I'd say strikouts is the most important thing for a pitcher.
And he's not a better ERA guy. And he's throwing more
innings. That's the thing. I don't know that he is a better ERA guy because it depends on how you feel about Iwakuma, right? For 2013 and almost all of 2014, he was like a mid-2 ERA guy. 2.33 in 2013. And then 257 through August 19th in 2014. But the end of 2014 and the first half of 2015 were horrible for Iwakuma. And that's why he has mid-3 ERA. But
Yeah.
If you don't, if you believe in that other pitcher, then he's like a mid two ERA guy.
He's clearly a better WHIP guy than Ross. He's clearly a better innings per start guy than Ross. In part because the WHIP's low, because the control's better, so he's able to pitch deeper. But he's not as healthy as Ross. I mean, there's pros and cons to both. And I feel like both of these pitchers are really there's not really a comparison for either one. They're in their own category of what kind of pitcher they are, which is making them hard to compare to others.
That's fair. Well, then let's read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Heath's got to get out of here a little bit early today for some video. And a lot of great video on the website, by the way. The written content's all up. So go to fantasynews.cbsports.com. Yeah. Richard from Toronto says, "Dear Malcolm, Tom, and Vaughn." Those feel like Super Bowl MVPs to me.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, cool. "Are you expecting any regression from Nolan Arenado?" Oh, those are the last three Super Bowl MVPs.
Aha.
Yeah, Malcolm Smith, Tom Brady. Brady must have been MVP, right?
Wasn't Malcolm Butler MVP?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was Brady.
I don't have an idea.
I think it was.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
"Are you expecting any regression from Nolan Arenado? How will his production be affected by no longer having Tulowitzki and Dickerson around him in the lineup?"
Well, I mean, he didn't have Tulo in the lineup the end of last year. He didn't have Dickerson in the lineup most of last year.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, no. Fine, forget that. Are you expecting any regression from Nolan Arenado?
If the Rockies offense, I would not expect him to have 42 home runs and 130 RBIs, probably.
Did he have 130 RBIs
yes.
last year? That's amazing.
So I guess some regression, sure. But he's still going to be an elite third baseman.
Yeah, it's like a law of averages regression, as opposed to, he's not really that good regression.
Right. And he was really good away from Coors
like
last year.
If the offense is worse, it's going to... His RBIs could drop by 25.
Yeah.
He could have 105 RBIs.
You'll take 105, though.
Yeah, that's still good.
Yeah. All right, next email. Fred from West Virginia. "Dear Inigo Fezzik and Vicini." I haven't seen that movie in so long, so I don't know if I'm pronouncing all those names right. "But I do know Inigo Montoya, and I know he's Saul from Homeland, and that's Princess Bride. Okay, I recently acquired Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner for Sonny Gray and Carlos Carrasco in an off-season trade." He got Posey and Bumgarner for Gray and Carrasco.
Okay.
"Would I be pushing my luck by playing Posey as my first baseman?"
Yeah. Keep going, sorry.
"Since I don't have any good keeper options there and try to draft Darnold or Steven Vogt as a catcher. Or should I keep Posey behind the plate and hope for a good option at first to fall to me? This is a points league with up to five keepers constituting the first five rounds. And just for perspective, Fred, Buster Posey was the number 9 first baseman in fantasy last year in both points and roto."
All right, so you may not be able to get an elite first baseman, but could you get Lucas Duda? Because Lucas Duda, in standard CBS leagues, scored 378 points last year, while Steven Vogt scored 333.5. I mean, not even close. And that's just one example. Yeah, I mean, an average to low-end mixed league first baseman is better than the kind of catchers you're talking about.
Right.
So it's just a simple math equation.
Yeah. David in New York City says, "Dear Cameron, Ferris, and Sloan Peterson, needs some help in his keeper league. 5x5, 12 teams, 30-man rosters, and I can only keep two. $22 Jose Abreu, $13 Anthony Rendon, $19 Chris Davis, $21 Charlie Blackmon, $12 Lorenzo Cain, $10 Miguel Sano, $15 Corey Dickerson, $10 Marcus Stroman. Pick two."
Pick two, like I'm at Panera Bread.
They let you pick two there?
Oh, yeah.
With like two
that's
sides?
All I ever do.
Two sides? Or
two. Like you pick half a sandwich, half a salad.
Oh.
Cup of soup, half a sandwich.
Oh,
and that's the thing is you really should be like pick two halves because you're not actually getting two full things.
Yeah,
but their halves are
big. Pick half.
You know, half a sandwich for them is bigger than the sandwich I'd make at home still.
Is it?
And the salad is like...
I make bigger sandwiches than Scott does.
The salad is like... I can't even imagine eating a whole salad because the half salad's so big.
Interesting.
But, yeah, this is a fine commercial for Panera.
I've been to Panera like twice. Maybe I should go more.
Yeah, I'd probably been twice before I got married.
Now you're all over it?
Yeah.
I've got the number of times I've gone since getting married is like 1,000 times.
Why?
More.
Why is it a place that you go after you get married?
It's a popular place among 20 to 30 year old women.
Oh. So wait, that would mean after I get married, I would go less. Because.
No.
She might go more.
She's going to want to take you with her.
But all I'm saying is if I were single,
spend time with her?
You're not going to get to eat meals alone anymore.
If I were single, then what you just told me is a gold mine.
No,
like
I don't.
You go to Panera Bread for the 21 to 30 year old women.
Maybe that's not a bad idea. Take your laptop, do work from there.
Yeah, exactly. Cool guy. All right, well, anyway, I look forward to that when I get married. So pick two keepers for this guy, for David.
Chris Davis and Lorenzo Cain.
That's Davis for 19 and Cain for 12.
I might pay up 3 for Abreu.
Yeah. Okay.
Over Davis.
And then what about your second keeper?
Well, you know what? Maybe I'd even go Abreu Davis.
Davis was better than Abreu last year, right?
He was last year, but I mean, 2 years ago, Jose Abreu was going first round.
Okay.
Well, two years ago, he played like a first rounder.
Yeah.
He wasn't going first round, right?
I'm just saying, I don't know that.
Because that was his rookie year.
I feel like Jose Abreu was somewhere in between 2014 and 2015. True, yeah. Jose Abreu. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Did you stick with Cain, though?
I don't know about it. See, that's why I was saying maybe I'd go Abreu and Davis and leave out Cain.
Oh, okay.
Because Davis qualifies for the outfield, at least in standard CPS.
Right.
So.
Okay.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, it's a good point because in our roto draft, I drafted a first baseman early.
Mm-hmm.
Second round, I think. And then I drafted Freddie Freeman because I really liked the value and I filled corner infield. And I just thought, we're talking about how shallow first base is.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just
screw somebody over. Make it so three people are doomed at the position instead of just two.
But also, how good could corner infield be if first base is shallow? So now I've got a good corner infielder, too.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, Greg's email says, Dear Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and Soundgarden, I would say inappropriate rankings of the three bands.
I don't know if they were, like, they just don't belong together?
No, I think you have to name Nirvana first. It's okay. Nirvana 1, Pearl Jam 2, Soundgarden 3.
Fair enough. I don't believe Soundgarden really belongs in that pairing.
Is it a Seattle thing? Soundgarden from Seattle?
Probably, yeah.
All right, I'm not sold on a proper strategy for starting pitcher. On the one hand, Scott is clearly right. This is a year where top-end pitching is deep and impressive. But typically when a position is deep, like quarterback, you're advised to wait and grab the scarce positions earlier, like running back. I'm just curious how getting two pitchers in the first 4 to 5 rounds puts me in a better position to succeed than loading up on mid-round pitchers and getting the more scarce, high-end hitters early.
Now, see, when starting pitcher first started getting deep, I said this same thing. I agreed with Greg's point here. And I feel like I was proven wrong, and now it's only deeper. And maybe the distinction between it and quarterback is, okay, everyone's only starting one quarterback, and there's enough to go around. But starting pitcher, you're starting at minimum 5, maybe 6 in a roto league, maybe 7 in a roto league. And it becomes an issue of keeping up with the competition, because if everyone else has 2 of these ace-level pitchers and you have 1 or perhaps none, then that's a clear disadvantage you have every time you play anyone else. I mean, I guess I'm talking more from a head-to-head perspective, but certainly that applies in roto, too. When you're, you know, the full season, you're at a disadvantage in the pitching categories. So I feel like because there's so many more ace-level pitchers, guys you can trust to put up those big-time numbers, it's going to be harder for the mid-range pitchers to catch up to them. And if you don't catch up to them, it's an even bigger hole. I don't think I explained it very well again. But
no, you explained it fine. I just think that you say there are so many guys, like 20, that are in that tier after Kershaw.
Yeah, I think 17 counting Kershaw, what I consider ace-caliber pitchers.
They're almost all going to be gone by the end of the 5th round, though.
But that's why I'm fine waiting until rounds 4 and 5
yes.
to take pitchers.
Yeah, that's fine.
Two in the first five rounds.
That's what I've been saying,
always,
too.
Yeah,
two
that's
in the
never
five.
Changed. I mean, I've always taken
well, you
two
took
in the
three
first five
in the first
rounds.
Five.
I did.
Yeah, but okay, sometimes things change. But that's
yeah,
Scott's
the,
not saying
the
you
way
have
that
to do
specific
that.
Draft broke down, I thought it made sense to take 3 in the first 5 rounds. But my advice for this year at starting pitcher is 2 in the first 5 rounds. In head-to-head, for sure. In roto, maybe you can get away with 1. But you want one of those top seven. You want ideally two of those top 17 pitchers, and you'll, like Heath said, they'll probably all be gone at the end of round five.
You know, it's Valentine's Day coming up Sunday, and
we don't celebrate that anymore.
We always after once you go to once you start going to Panera, you stop celebrating.
Yeah. What really? And how do you get away with that?
I said to my now fiance, I said, I really don't like flowers. Do I really have to get you flowers for Valentine's Day? And the answer is yes, I do. But I hate, they're so worthless.
No,
they're worth,
I disagree.
They're worthwhile for like 2 days.
Yeah.
I don't often buy flowers on Valentine's Day, but I'll buy them 5 or 6 times throughout the year.
Not me.
You're one of those spontaneous types, huh?
Don't buy them when they're expecting them.
Well, Valentine's Day, they're like 4 or 5 times as expensive, too, yeah. Which is, I mean...
Not at Publix.
Not at Publix?
Yeah. Publix has got pretty decent flowers.
Publix throw is the Publix commercial in the world, there, though. Too.
Yeah.
Shopping is a pleasure.
So anyway, we always do a player we love for Valentine's Day. I think... I don't know. He's a little too high-end, but I'm feeling like could be an Arrieta-type year. I think I love Carlos Martinez. I think he's going to be my... betrothed.
You're going to ask him to be your Valentine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. It might be. I'll give it some thought, and maybe like next week when we come back after Valentine's Day, we'll give our players we love. Or should we do it this week? Should we do it tomorrow? Should we do
sure.
our players we love?
Oh, man.
All right. Just one player. One
okay.
player that is your Valentine for 2016. Heath,
I'll come
get out of
here.
Huh? You have to leave?
No, I got 4 minutes.
Okay, cool.
I can answer
more emails.
3 more emails.
Mike says, last year Rendon was going in the first or second round before the news of his injury. Is there any reason why he wouldn't be able to bounce back outside of health? And what would you pay for Anthony Rendon in an auction league?
Yeah, that's an interesting player, Rendon, this year. I feel like the reason I'm not completely trusting in him bouncing back is because he didn't last year. He got a little better towards the end of the year, but it wasn't that second round caliber player. It was like 4 home runs and 160 at-bats or something like that. I think he hit 280.
It was so disappointing.
It was fine production, but not elite.
But can you say with Rendon, we know what type of prospect he was. The only thing that was a concern was the health, you know, coming into the majors. He played so well. He was so good. Obviously, the injury really threw him off last year. Let's just erase 2015. Can we just erase it?
I can't.
No, but you can minimize it. I don't.
You hit the little
it's, yes,
minus sign,
it's,
not the
it's
X.
Not gone, but you. It's not as important in evaluating him as 2014 is. It just lowers 2014 expectations a little bit.
2016 expectations.
Yes.
One of those years.
Yeah.
I get confused when
I have
start
at 19,
multiple years around in the yeah. same sentence.
To answer the auction question, I have him at $19.
That's a lot. Not that it's too much, but that's a substantial price to pay for someone.
I have him 17 in Roto, probably, I don't know, head-to-head. It might be about the same.
$17.
Yeah.
Okay. From Matt P. Let's do Matt P. first. What's up, Walt, Daddy, and Murray? And he says, if you're from the South, you should get it. Scott?
Scott White.
I'm from the South. Well, you're from the South, too. Missouri
no.
counts.
Missouri's
no?
the Midwest.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, that is true. Well, look it up, somebody.
It's kind of borderline, because Arkansas is the South, right?
Right.
Missouri's
it's south of,
right
it's
there.
It's south of Missouri, directly.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, there's a transition.
At some point, there is. I don't imagine it's the border of the state, though.
Well, Missouri and Kansas are the two like centermost states in the United States, so I think they have to be in the Midwest.
It's a tweener.
No,
a tweener.
I don't think so. I think it's clear Midwest.
It's kind of like Maryland. It's a tweener.
Maryland is a tweener, but I don't know about Missouri. Okay. Here's the question. What's the best way to limit teams from streaming without setting an innings limit? We want it to be more about the pitchers on your roster and not who gets the best matchups from the waiver wire each day. 5x5 categories league with quality starts instead of wins. So best way to limit teams from streaming without setting an innings limit?
Fab?
Yeah. Or transactions limit?
Yeah.
Or just set an innings
limit.
But more yeah. specifically, I'm not in favor of doing that.
Transactions you could do weekly transactions as opposed is it a daily league
I'm not sure if I caught that it's got to be
daily lineups, so make it weekly waiver wire, and then I mean people can still stream, but they're committing for the whole week and they won't be as likely
right.
you know, it's not just one dumping one player for the two-star guy of the day. It's dumping five players for the two-star guys of the week, and I think people will be more reluctant to do that.
I did a categories league, head-to-head categories with... bye, Heath.
Later.
With maximum transactions, like seven per week. You know, one per day, basically. And that did a pretty good job. Heath takes the headset with him. That did a pretty good job limiting that. So,
yeah.
At the end of the week, you could maybe stream guys over the weekend, but you can't do it every day because if you need to pick up a hitter or if somebody gets hurt on your team, you want to leave some transactions. So that's an option too. Isaac says, I'm not sure if I agree with the sentiment that Correa is so risky. How bad could Correa be? And even if he were that bad, wouldn't he still be a very high-end shortstop?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you talk about it so much that it becomes bigger than it really is. Because he's not so risky. He's probably going to be the top shortstop. It's just relative to other first-rounders. Like, that's a pick you can't afford to screw up. So if there's a
Machado
15% chance he's not that good.
I thought you were going for a player.
No.
Well, if there were a Machado or Correa, I think Machado is pretty safe at this point, right?
If for no other reason, because he's done it a whole year as opposed to two-thirds of a year, you know?
Right.
And there's just so many examples, particularly recently, and maybe it's recently because rookies are so much better these days, but, you know, just a few off the top of my head, and I understand all these weren't as good as Correa was as a rookie, but Jason Hayward took a huge step back. Eric Hosmer took a big step back. Brett Lowry's never been the same since his rookie season. And no, these guys weren't ones we were drafting in the first round, but third, fourth round going into their sophomore seasons. And looking back, it's like, why did we do that? So I just don't want to be in that same position with Correa, even though I think he's less likely. You have to give the risk more credit just because it's first round we're talking about, you know?
In a categories or rotisserie league, now look, it's February 9th, and I am really starting to dig in now. When we start doing the position previews, I'll feel more comfortable, but I must say that I'm not where the other guys on this show are in terms of my research, my knowledge, and I'm not going to be because I'm the lowly host, whatever, you know. I'm not a writer, but I try my best. So I'm just going to say that in a roto league, I still feel like Altuve should go before Correa. You know, he's so solid with batting average. He's going to get you the steals. He's going to score a ton of runs. Obviously, he's not going to hit home runs. But Altuve, to me, seems like very safe.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a great lineup. He's going to hit the top of it. So I would take Altuve over Correa. Maybe I changed my mind.
I don't think that's a crazy position, but I'm not drafting Correa as high in the first round as most people are. I think Altuve and Correa are two spots apart in my top 300 with Pollock in between.
Okay.
So I hear you.
Okay, and the last email is from Bart. He says, Dear Al, Dan, and John. And those are retired pitchers that are now MLB Network analysts. Al Leiter, Dan Plesac, John Smoltz.
Alrighty.
Adam, in regards to the live mock draft and your fourth round pick, both Heath and Scott stated that you could not draft Todd Frazier at that point because you already had Matt Carpenter. I'm a big believer in drafting the best available player, especially early in the draft. If Todd Frazier was in fact the best available on both Heath and Scott's rankings, why couldn't you have filled your utility slot and possibly used either Frazier or Carpenter as a trade chip later on in the season? Is this not a strategy any of you would consider? And also he says, you know, Frazier's going to tail off in the second half, so sell him high. So let me address the second part first. I feel like with Todd Frazier, everybody knows at this point that he's the most likely player to have a bad second half. And good luck selling high on him to any experienced fantasy player.
Because he's done it 2 years in a row?
Yes.
Okay.
It's hard to say that anybody's definitely going to have a bad second half, but if there's one guy that I'm looking at to do it, it's Frazier.
Okay.
Also, I don't like Frazier probably as much as you guys do because it's kind of like Chris Davis to me, where I feel like there are a lot of possible outcomes. He's been so amazing at points in his career and so bad, and that scares me a little bit. And filling a utility slot in the fourth round is not something I want to do, though. But it's not a bad point.
Yeah, that's the part I want to address. it's one thing to say, yeah, best player available. Look, I still have a spot I can start Frazier. But if you fill that spot in the fourth round, then you can, you never have the option of taking the best available player again. It's like you're using that card right. at that point in the draft, and that's too early in my mind. And that's why I don't normally like drafting DH-only players. And it might be different if it was a roto league with a corner infield spot and a utility spot.
Right. Like the Freeman pick.
Yeah.
Totally different.
Yeah. But when you're just talking about third base or utilities are literally the only spots you can play Frazier and you use it up that early, it's not good. I also don't like drafting, to address the other half of his point, mm-hmm. I don't like drafting in anticipation of making a trade, because trading is really hard, especially trading to get back proper value for something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe you play in a league where people just trade willy-nilly, but none of my leagues are like that. You really have to catch a person in the right moment with a big enough need and a big enough motivation to make that deal.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. And I like trading. I trade a lot. Heath tells me that I make very lopsided, unfair trade offers. I disagree. But I'm sure we'll argue about that throughout the year. But, yeah, the fourth round, there were still a lot of really good players. I don't remember who I ended up taking. Adam Jones, I think I took. I'd rather have him than Frazier.
Certainly if you already have third base filled, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think just if you're talking best player, I think he's better than Frazier anyway.
Right. Thank you for the email, Bart. Thank you for the emails to everybody. Keep them coming. We're back tomorrow with another podcast, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Please put baseball podcast in the subject line, and the fewer keeper questions we get, the better. Good job, Scott White.
Same to you, Adam. It's
good
nice
to be
having
in
you
person.
Here. Yeah, I know. We probably talked over each other less.
Probably, because we could hear each other better.
We could see each other.
We're going to rectify that problem, though. I've got some ideas by the end of the week. Now, you can hear Scott's headset's a little creaky. We're going to get that fixed. hopefully by next week, everything will sound better and be better. And thanks for listening.
It'd be like
now.
A sound garden.
Yeah.
Oh, well, bringing it back. No, we already had a Soundgarden reference. That was outstanding.
Okay, it was good.
And it works with the flowers that we were talking about.
Oh, you're bringing it all together.
Yeah. All right, for Scott White, Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. See you later.